good.
I'm just going to wait for Tony and Yaakov to come. I don't know what they
are. I need a cup, Yaakov. One of my major cultural adjustments was my Rebbe from Shanghai, Rav Henoch Fishman. So he, Ich verstehe die Amerikaner, they drink out of a bottle. Well, I mean, he was from Mir, so from that day on, I try to get a glass if I'm going to drink something, not to embarrass my Rebbe's memory. But he was from Mir, we were the sophisticated Americans, and he gave us a little musa. I have to wait for the okay. The truth is, I speak what they asked me to speak about, and here I feel bad because I gave a talk yesterday afternoon that I've never ever given before on the Rav and his attitude towards synagogue council, and that talk should have been recorded. It for all of us come in tons. I'm not a Satmar. Satmar, the Rebbe was in Meron, and they hired Russian Israelis to video him on Shabbos. How they do it, Vaisichnish. But they, excuse me if any Satmar, I don't want to offend anyone, but they do have a different religion, that much I can say. Can I begin, Rabbi? You were waiting, everyone's here that we were waiting for? Okay. The topic they asked me to speak at now it's my Rebbe's 25th Yahrzeit. And I gave 22 years worth of Shiurim on the Rav, a good deal of which is lost forever because it's before the invention of the greatest gift to Torah ever, the internet. So they're not recorded. It's chaval, but nothing we can do. If I could go back in time to 78 and start all over, we would have. We have some of them, but it's towards the tail end. So I don't lack for Shiurim on the Rav, but what I'm asked to speak about is what I'll speak about. So here we come to a tremendous question. You're living in a world, again, as I referred to yesterday, you live in a world of art scroll and Mishpacha and Ami, and everything remains stationary. Very little changes, if at all. The Torah world is very different. It's in flux, it moves on, it has to be successful in many different civilizations. The Gemara says in Menachot, it's an unbelievable Gemara, Daf Chavchet at the bottom, Daf Chavchet on top, that the Ribbono Shel Olam tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Asei Lecha Chatzotzrot, make trumpets for yourself. And the Gemara says, all the Kelim in the Mishkan were good for Moshe's Dor and good for all Dorot. But the Chatzotzrot, only Moshe could blow. Afterwards, it has to be buried, and the new leader has to make himself new Chatzotzrot. So the question is why? Manishtana Chatzotzrot from the clay Mishkan, from the menorah, the shulchan, the aron, etc. And the answer is very simple but so important. All the other kelim deal with the Jew worshipping the Ribbono Shel Olam. That doesn't change the way we worshipped him in the desert, we worshipped him in the tabernacles, we worshipped him in the Beit HaMikdash, that should be rebuilt speedily this week yet, Be'ezrat Hashem. But the Chatzotzrot represent Moshe's relationship with Klal Yisrael. And there already there's a concept, Vayakhil et Eidah, you have to get the people together, Balotcha, Pashat Balotcha, you have to speak to them, and every generation is different. The way Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to them was good for his generation. But then the Chatzotzrot have to be buried. Dor dor v'doshav, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Chet, every generation needs someone who can speak in the context and understanding of that generation where Torah is functioning and illuminating. So here you come to the whole question of Zionism, Medinat Yisrael, and you go back in time. The Rav, those of us who learn by the Rav, and have a classmate here who's going to be very famous when my next book is published. There's a mock-up copy you'll see later, but the manuscript is ready, but it's a very difficult task putting this book together because it happens to have four different sections, and each section has to be put together very carefully. So in one section, I have the famous picture, the quintessential picture that survives of the Rav teaching in Shir. And I'm able to date that picture because of someone in it. 1960 was the only year he studied with the Rav. And I worked a number of years now. I've published the picture twice before, once in Washington, once in the Rav. And I worked very hard the last few years to try to identify the 29 people in the picture. I have identified 27. And Rabbi Rifkin is right there, identified right in front, clearer than anyone. What makes the picture so fascinating is that sitting before the Rav, Moreinu v'Rabbeinu, the future leaders of what you call the Haredim, the future leaders of the centrists, the future leaders of Chovevei Torah, everyone is in that picture, sitting before the Rav, b'dechilu u'rechimu. And if anyone here wants to be a multimillionaire, I have a few Talmidim here from Borough Park, you don't have to work. Do your research. The class of 1960 revisited. And just do short biographies on each individual there and what happened later in life. And then you can do a musavat, a hashkafavat, how one Rebbe can have Talmidim who is so different, and you'll have a bestseller. You follow? You're set. You'll be able to buy out Osherad and the glut market together. So, you know, we grew up with the Rav. The Rav, when you walked into the Rav's class, I need not tell you, we were transported back in time. It was the Rav sitting there. I felt Reb Chaim was sitting there. My students often compliment me that in my classroom you feel the Rav. And I said, yes, I won't say a word that would embarrass my Rebbe. In the Rav Shir, we felt Reb Chaim was there. Now, you talk about Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim already functioned in the 1880s, the 1890s, early 1900s. Zionism was just beginning. People were talking about a return, national identity. The Poles want Poland, the Italians want Italy. We Jews should want Israel. And you should know that there was tremendous opposition. And Reb Chaim Brisco was 100% opposed to any concept of Zionism. There can be no sovereignty before Mashiach Tzidkenu. More than that, let me tell you a true story, which I heard. There are many variations, but the basic story is true. I heard it from the Rav. I heard it from Abraham Soloveitchik. I heard it from the next generation. When Theodor Herzl died, the Jewish masses were very moved, and they wanted to eulogize him. And they came to Brisk, the Balabatim. They told Reb Chaim, they told the Dayan, Reb Simcha Zelig Riga, we want a hesped for Herzl. And Reb Chaim Asit, Chas v'chalila, there can be no hesped in any shul in Brisk. So Menachem Begin's father established a new shul, and he said the chayrim against being masped is not chal on this shul because it's brand new. It wasn't around when Reb Chaim said you can't. And it was called the Herzl Shul in two World War II. Another story which illustrates the feeling, I think they tell me this happened in Minsk, that the Balabatans put such pressure on the Rabbanim, they had to allow a hesped. So they brought in a Magid, the town Magid, and they started being Maspid, Mir sei haben mir gesagt, dass ein Adam Gadol ist gestorben. Everyone, you know the way a hesped was given in Europe, they used to sing it. I still heard Reb David Lifshitz give a hesped. It was just one sad song. They told me an Adam Gadol died. Ich ken was is an Adam Gadol. I know what an Adam Gadol is. Ey, mir mit weisen de Tvillen from the Vilna Goen. Gib ich a tausen Rubel. If they'll show me the Tvillen of the Vilna Goen, I give 1,000 ruble. If they'll show me the Tvillen of the Baal Shem Tov, I give 1,000 ruble. If they'll show me the Tvillen of an Adam Gadol Theodor Herzl, I give 10,000 ruble. All right, and that was the attitude. But it's not only, I have to tell you the truth, let's close the Artsville books on Torah history, and let's be honest, when Agudat Yisrael, they were talking about establishing Agudat Yisrael, this is 1912, and I heard this from the family, I heard this from Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, I heard it from the grandchildren, from Tova and others. So they were talking about Agudat Yisrael, so they decided to hold a preliminary meeting. And Reb Chaim came to the meeting. And there were Yekesha Rabbanim, we spoke about Yeki Land yesterday. There were Chassidisha Rabbeim and Litvisha Rashi Yeshiva. So Reb Chaim got up and left in the middle of this conference. So they said to Reb Chaim, Rebbe, what went wrong? And Reb Chaim told them, I quote word by word what I heard from the family. Ich hab na in Sprach. I only have one language. Torah. I can only talk Torah. That a German rabbi should speak for a half hour and not quote one Maimer Chazal, I can't be part of such an organization. So you see, even Reb Chaim, now after World War I, cut off the formation of Agudat Yisrael. In 1919, it picked up again. Reb Chaim was gone already. So Reb Chaim was never a founding father or one of those who gave the Agudat its hashkafa. But that was the attitude. Chadash Hashem in a Torah, paraphrasing the Chatam Sefer. Adain Kat Chabeinik Lachs, but I have great-grandchildren who are Chatam Sefer descendants. That's from Manchester, via Manchester. And you understand, Chatam Sefer took the Mishnah in Arla and interpreted it literally. Anything new was forbidden, and Reb Chaim was totally opposed. And this was the world in which my Rebbe was raised. Of course, there was another factor in the world, and you all know that the feminine mystique makes up 51% of the population. There are more women than men because if you've studied science, a woman's body is stronger than a man. So the survival rate in birth is higher than among the males. And that's why they say we wind up with 51% female, 49% male. Now, women also, the Gemara says, in Nida, Bini Yatera Benashim, women have a little bit more common sense than men. It's a reality, because I'll say it, and I've seen it all my life. Reb Moshe married Rebbetzin Pesha Feinstein. Rebbetzin Pesha was the daughter of Reb Elia Feinstein, the Prushana Rav. She was a first cousin to Reb Moshe Feinstein. Interestingly enough, they were not first cousins via Feinstein. Their mothers were sisters. Via Feinstein, they were like fifth or sixth cousins, but their mothers were sisters. Rebbetzin Pesha, who I yet had the schut of knowing, grew up in a more open environment than Reb Chaim. And at an early age already, she had a very proactive and positive attitude towards Zionism. So the Rav is growing up, he's in Kaslovich, afterwards in Warsaw, and as we spoke about yesterday at Shalosh Shudos, in 1926, he comes to Berlin. And again, I want to repeat what I said yesterday because it's earth-shaking. who could believe? And the Rav called his 7 years, he referred to it in Berlin, it actually was 6 and a half, in 32 he comes to America, called it the 7 good years. And this is Berlin, that 10 years later, they'll kill every Jew, man, woman, and child. Hard to conceive of this. The Rav said, my own professors became Nazis. And Berlin, the attraction, it was a who's who in Torah. Yesterday I mentioned all them, Reb Chaim Heller, the Sri Deyesh, Reb Yitzchak Kutner, Mori Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Professor Avram Yeshua Heschel, the Kapichtinzer Rebbe's son, brother, and the greatest woman of the 20th century. Tell me who was in Berlin at that time. No, Nechama Leibovitch. It's unbelievable. And the Rav's experience in Berlin is multifaceted, but I only want to zero in on one aspect. You see, in Chaslavich in Warsaw, he was exposed to... Chaslavich was Lubavitch. Warsaw was Ger, Mudzic. The Rebbe, Mori Rebbe, used to talk about it. Some of his best stories take place in the main shul of Chaslavich, where the Alter Rebbe davened, or in the Gerish Shtibel and the Majester Shtibel in Warsaw. Now he comes to Berlin. Could you imagine a Shalashudas in a Majester Shtibel of utter poor Jews in Warsaw? And the Rebbe, Mori Rebbe said, I quote him, we lived in the poorest neighborhood. That was where the Chassidim lived, who had money. Let's look at a Chassidish Shalashudas, herring, some stale challah, with your fingers, how do you eat, maybe a little seltzer. And now he's in Berlin. No, let's picture a Shalashudas in the Orthodox shuls in Berlin. You sat down at the Shalashudas, there were 3 forks on the table, 2 knives, dishes, who touched fingers, napkins, food on a level. Berlin. And see, here in Berlin, he's exposed to Agudat Yisrael. Germany was the heartthrob of Agudat Yisrael. Agudat Yisrael functioned out of Frankfurt. Morenu Rav Yaakov Rosenhan. Make believe you've heard the name, you know who I'm talking about, that the ignorant pass for the wise. Morenu HaRav Yaakov Rosenheim, I know of 2 people who got honorary smicha. He's one of them. I got smicha, I had to work hard, I had to learn, I had to pass exams. Shmuel Lam is sitting here. His father was my classmate. Let your dad tell you what we went through. We bit our nails. Oh, is he Rifkin? Lopashut. Yaakov Rosenheim at the Aguda Convention in 29, I believe it was, they awarded him the title Morenu HaRav because he was a Yekka of Talmud of Rav Hirsch. He put Aguda on the map, organized, diligent. And here the Rav sees in Berlin a magnificent Agudat Yisrael. Now, by this time, Aguda had 2 basic theological premises that they adopted as their outlook, their hashkafa. Number one, there can be no Jewish state, no Jewish sovereignty before Mashiach Tzidkenu. That's number one. Number two, on every question, not just pure halacha, but social, economic, civic issues, there is das Torah, da'at Torah, Sigamarin Chulin, daf tzadi, hey, tzadi dalid. And it means something else there. All it means in relation to the Git Hanasheh, what the tradition is, what part of the vein do you have to remove? But they took the words Da'at Torah, that the rabbis rule what they say is accurate and it must be followed. And The Rav got caught up with this ideology. In Berlin, he became an Agudist. To a certain degree, it was a compromised position between his father and his mother. And he found his place. Then, of course, he moves on to America. I have to be brief here, and he's caught up with a maelstrom of other problems. But while this is happening, in 1937, Agudat Yisrael holds its last Knesiya Gedola world conference before the Holocaust. And now you have some from Jews in America, and particularly the rabbi I spoke about yesterday in Cincinnati, Reb Lazer Silva. And the Rav worshipped the ground that Reb Lazer Silva walked on. If you talk about the 1930s into the early 40s, who was the Rav's role model before he returns or enters the classroom in 41, it was Reb Lazer Silva. And Reb Lazer goes to Europe. All right, you go to Europe. The first thing Reb Lazer does, he goes to visit his Rebbe of yesteryear, the Rav of Vilna, Reb Chaim Moshe Grishensky. And Reb Chaim Moshe says to Reb Lazer, I quote word by word, although I wasn't there, but I guarantee you this is correct. Mein Talmud, Lazer, ich denk, as es Zeit zu gründen an Agudas Yisrael in Amerika. The Zeit hat gekommen. The time has come to organize an Agudat Yisrael in the United States. Reb Lazer was an Isha Ma'aseh. This is not like a kid promises his father, his Rebbe, his mother, he'll do this, he'll do that, and then he gets involved with the Yankee Red Sox game and it's all forgotten. This Reb Lazer immediately went to work. Knew who became his co-worker in organizing Agudat Yisrael in America and the first convention in 1938, Moriu Rebbe and Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. The Reb Lazer is the president of Agudat Yisrael in America, and the Rav is chairman of the Vat HaPoel, chairman of the active committee that guides Agudat, Moriu Rebbe. A Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah is formed in 1941. Who is one of the members of the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah? Moriu Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. And you don't have to believe Rakefich, you don't have to believe what he wrote in the Silver Era. Look up Hapades, the rabbinic journal, and you'll see his name with all the other names. Not only that, Reb Chaim Moshe dies in August of 1940, and that fall at the Agudat Convention, Moriu Rebbe eulogizes Reb Chaim Moshe. I have heard from people who today head the Agudat Yisrael, I'll quote what they told me, it was the most extreme expression of Agudat theology ever expressed since Agudat Yisrael was organized. That Hesped has been published and republished many times. For me to recreate it would take an hour and a half now, but the heart of it is the tzitz on the forehead, the choshen mishpat on the front of the Kohen Gadol, and these represent the totality of Torah expression. The tzitz is halacha, the choshen mishpat, the breastplate, represents Klal Yisrael, the 12 Shvatim, the stones, issues, economic, civic, general nature. Who has to decide? The Kohen Gadol, the Adam Gadol, the Talmud Chacham, the Rosh Yeshiva. And he describes Reb Chaim, it's a fabulous hesped given minutes before Jewish blood will roll like a sea of tears, lo aleinu, a sea that affects us until this very second. Que pasa? What happened? So you have to understand the Agudat point of view. At that time, Agudat's point of view was olam kaminehu go holeich. The world lives on, nothing changes. Halacha doesn't change, Torah doesn't change, and a Goyisha cup doesn't change. Don't fight Hitler. In the late 30s, they called for a demonstration against Hitler at Madison Square Garden. My parents always spoke about it. They couldn't even get in. They were outside. The Madison Square Garden was filled to capacity. Tens of thousands lined Midtown New York streets, demonstrating against Hitler. Boycott Hitler. Boycott German products. Moriah Rebbe was part of Agoda. Their attitude was not to boycott, not to demonstrate. Don't get Hitler angry. Shtatlanut. Act the way Jews have acted from time immemorial. Act behind the scenes. Don't get Hitler angry. Inactivity on a public level. All right, we know what happened. But something happened in the middle of World War II that totally shook up, became a catalyst for my Rebbe's thinking. Moriah Rebbe spoke about this many times. The Boston Rebbe's wife wrote a memoir that was published by Misora. You'll see the same thought in there. And it's very simple. By 1943, every Jew who was still thinking knew what was going on in Europe. The State Department attempted to hide it. The Reform rabbis who cooperated with the State Department attempted to hide it. Didn't want to quote Roosevelt, interfere with the war effort, end quote. But everyone knew that every day, hundreds of thousands of Jews are being sacrificed. 2 days before Yom Kippur, the Vat Hatzalah, together with the Agudas HaRabbanim, and this, by the way, is on YouTube, movies of it, planned a march on Washington to demand to speak with FDR about doing something to save the Jews. And they marched on Washington. Hundreds of rabbis arrived at the Capitol. And I quote my Rebbe now, word by word, the Rav said, they had 2 days before Yom Kippur, they had to leave their homes, had to go to Washington, had to march, forget about their sermons, forget about their preparations, and to plead. And the famous picture. By the way, the Rav was not famous yet. You got to remember, people ask me, how come he's not up front with Rav Lezer Silva, with Rav Leventhal, with Rav Rosenberg? They don't understand that people are not born famous. It takes years until the world recognizes you. So at that time, the Rav was one of 200 plus Rabbanim, probably in the fourth row, not in the first row. Hitler refused to see them. Hitler. Thank you. Wanted to see if you're awake yet. That's also a line. Remember the Rav when he mixed up Lula Vetro, got carried away. Kiddush Habdolah, Chavel Zenith, and Zayt Navach. We want to see if you're awake yet. Thank you. Roosevelt refused to see them. He sent out Henry Wallace, vice president. And the Rav said, I called the Rav again. And by the way, my book, I have the word Rav word by word with the source from the tape that I got it from. But I heard it also over the years. And the Rav says, and you know how much power a vice president has in the United States. And the Rav was decimated. From 46 on, there's a new Rabbi Soloveitchik. And he openly, totally, completely identifies with religious Zionism. As a matter of fact, he becomes the honorary president of the Mizrahi movement, a position he holds until his death. What happened? And here I have to tell you, many years ago I went into it and I reached my conclusion, and I'm overjoyed to say Rabbi Lichtenstein, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha, gave a talk at the Gush exactly my conclusion for the exactly the same reason. So it's, I'm speaking, but Count Baron Lichtenstein on my side here. You see, what the Rav realized is the shtatlanut of yesteryear, the chatzotzrot that the Jews used 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, you cannot use in modern times. Times have changed. We have to build a new trumpet. And this trumpet has to be blown publicly. We have to take action. We can't sit by idly and depend upon a few, pardon me for a contemporary word, a few machis. Follow that word? The New York Times has used it already. We can't depend upon a few machers. We have to yell, we have to shout, we have to do. And the Rav's entire gestalt was caught up. He would describe the chalutz in Eretz Yisrael, in one hand the Gemara, in another hand the plowshare. In one hand the Gemara, in another hand a machine gun. And he was totally caught up with what was germinating in the religious Zionist world. This reaches a crescendo one evening in 1956. And I have to tell you that when you look at the picture of that talk, Lamport Auditorium, Yeshiva University, if you take a magnifying glass, look at the people sitting there, I'll show you where I am sitting. So this talk, which subsequently has been published in Hebrew, in English, in French, and yours truly arranged for a Russian translation, I was there and heard it in person. 1956, the 8th anniversary of the State of Israel, the Mizrahi movement asked Mori Rebbe to give a talk in honor of the event. And that night he gave a talk which probably will remain the most famous talk he ever gave. Every child in the religious school system in Israel, and this totals already millions and millions of children, have learned this talk. As time moves on, it captivates more and more minds. And that talk, of course, was the famous, published afterwards under the title Kol Dodi Dofek. To tell you that it influenced my life, ultimately, with the Six-Day War, and my wife saying to me, either you follow me to Yerushalayim or stay behind, but I'm going. It goes back to that talk and what I spoke about on Shabbat with 1944 in Yeshiva Salanta. And what is Kol Dodi Dofek? Very briefly, I'm going to talk about it in Stamford, Connecticut from a different point of view, but we'll leave it for Wednesday night in Stamford. I just want to touch the basis here. We've all studied Shir HaShirim. We all, many of us say it, Erev Shabbos. Mori Rebbe used to describe, remember he cried once in a talk that there are no Erev Shabbos Jews in America. In America, Shabbos begins 8:10, the guy walks in the door 8 o'clock. He said in Chaslovich, and he describes his Rebbe, Rabbi Yaakov Baruch Riesberg, Baruch Yaakov Riesberg, an einikel from the Alter Rebbe, how 1 o'clock in the afternoon already he goes to mikveh, at Tutan the Shabbos Kleida, he gets dressed for Shabbos, and the next hour and a half he sings Shir HaShirim. He says, in America, thank God, we have today some Shomer Shabbos Jews, but we're lacking Erev Shabbos Jews. It's an unbelievable insight and correct. So what is Shir HaShirim? So you can interpret it on many levels, but let's take the basic story. It's a love story. A boy and a girl are in love. The boy is chasing the girl. Beautiful. And one day the young lady is tired. She's going to go to sleep early. And there's a knock on her door, kol dodi dofek. And it's the young man who wants to see her. And she's tired and she says, Pashatati et kuntati yecha el bishana. You know, Shashirim, I got undressed. I'm in my nightgown. How can I get dressed again? Come back tomorrow morning. And the morning comes and the doe, the lover, is gone. And she starts searching for him. Eifo halach dodi, looking, hunting. And finally she recognizes only b'yamot HaMashiach will she see him again. And you can interpret this, our love affair with the Ribbono Shel Olam, Matan Torah, we sin, only in the apocryphal age will we be totally reunited. But the Rav interpreted on a very mundane level. God knocks once. Are you big enough to answer the knock? Kol dodi dofek. Open the door. Accept the challenge. And he speaks about Eretz Yisrael. God is knocking on our door. And he gives six unbelievable knocks. Having lived in Israel, and this is my 50th Tisha B'Av as a citizen of the state of Israel, as Rakefet, not as Rothkopf, I can tell you there are more knocks as well. But the Rav talks about the miracle of the UN. Russia and America never agreed on anything. And when it came to establishing the state, America and Russia were among the first countries to recognize the state of Israel. It's unbelievable. Nowadays, I pity you Americans, you can't get into Russia. You have to get a visa, pay money, file who you are, what you are. I can dance into Russia at one moment's notice with an Israeli passport. And when I went out a year ago, my wife and I are going through security. And the lady hears us. I said a Hebrew word to my wife. I speak English to her, but I throw in occasionally Hebrew. I'm not a, you know, I've lived in Israel 50 years. What can I tell you? Sometimes I speak in Hebrew and think in Hebrew more than in English. But this lady, non-Jewish, picked it up. And when we're finished with the security check, she looks at us with a big smile and bows her head and says, Toda, thank you for coming. And wow, we walked out. What a difference from our days under the communists working for the Mossad and what we went through then to get in and out of Russia. So, what a miracle. Another miracle. Whoever heard of a Jewish boy, a sharpshooter? Who? Tell me, Izzy, if someone would have told you that Ani Rothkopf is going to win two awards for sharpshooting back in 1960, 59, 58, you would have believed him? Believe me, you would have said, I'm a sugarer. Get a rice from there. What the heck are you driving me crazy? I fought in two wars. Battle ribbons. The Jew is a different Jew. Did anyone would say to you, this Rothkopf is going to work for the Mossad 10 years? That forget about Rothkopf's books. You don't have to believe what he wrote. Adam Korovitz Alatzmo. The Mossad wrote a book about Malcolm myself. Take a look at it. B'nitiv Hadmama, The Silent Path. Would you have believed it back in six? All right, no way. At least Izzy is honest. He may have a PhD in chemistry, but he remains an honest individual. Baruch Hashem. The Rav talks about the army. The Rav talks about the white paper is gone. Every Jew can come back to Israel. Look what's going on today. You heard about the Kashrut situation? All the fancy restaurants in North Tel Aviv and Herzliya Pituach are going kosher. So Haaretz, which is not exactly an advocate of Kashrut, interviewed the owners. They say, what happened? You became Balei Tshuva? You're that stupid? They say, no, we're not Balei Tshuva. We're businessmen. We want to stay in business. No, but until now you open Shabbos. Yeah, but no one can afford our prices. Only the French Olim, They're the ones who are our customers today. And 99.99% of the French are Mapadan Kashrut, those coming into Israel. It's amazing. One of them said, I make more money today than I made before. They said, how can that be? You close Shabbos? He says, I get Britot and Pigeon Habens during the week from the fanciest French people that I never had before. So, wow, the country is open. The Russians, who could believe that the Russians today own the state of Israel? Who runs the government? Who are the politicians? Who is Sharansky? Who is Elkin? One after another. Who could believe it? And how many Russians, Balei Tshuva, Shomrei Torah, Mitzvot? Shvatami plays a role. Baruch Hashem. Who could believe what's happening? The Rav absolutely right. Oh. And the Rav speaks about the Catholic Church. That was the most poignant, traumatic, that the Catholic Church taught for close to 2,000 years. We are a cursed people because we didn't accept Yashka. And that's why we don't have Palestine. That's why we don't have Jerusalem. No, take a look. Who's in Eretz Yisrael today? Who's in Yerushalayim today? Who's at the Kotel today? Who's touring Har Habayit today, halachically touring? Jews. It's unbelievable. And the Rav goes on and on. And he didn't realize he was, the door is knocking. Will you respond? And later, even his own family, Mori Urebi, most of his descendants live in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutz Laaretz. And a little guy like Ani Rothkopf also heard the knocks. And we responded, and what a statement of Zionist theology. I want to go one step further, and then I'll bring a document. I'll conclude. God should give me strength, because it's very emotional for me. Baruch ato Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shachol Niyeh B'Dvaro. I tried to retain Ashkenazis, you know, back in 69. So my children laughed at me. They were going to school already. Today I can't speak Ashkenazis. In order for me to make a brach in Ashkenazis, I sound like a half-baked moron. Baruch, I can't do it. Baruch atah, Baruch Hashem. 50 years or 50 years. Ask me sometime about my conversation about with Rav Gorin at the Kotel, whether you can change from Havarashkenazis to Havarashvadit. Oh boy, that was a moment in time. I knew Rav Gorin quite well. I knew a lot of great. I should be 50 times bigger than I am, considering all the people I knew. But all right, I tried my best. I didn't amount to much. Coming back here, I want to take something else. To me, this is the most important hashkafic statement that Mori Urebi ever made. And again, it inspires me to this very second. Every year, he would be the featured speaker at the Mizrahi Convention. As a matter of fact, the night of my wedding, June 14th, 1960, the Rav says to me, I want you to be sure the wedding will begin exactly at 6 o'clock. I have to speak in Long Beach. It's the Mizrahi Convention. And I got hold of a Talmud in the yeshiva, Danny Rosenthal. Remember Danny Rosenthal? He was a little younger. He was a wealthy kid. He had a jalopy. And Danny drove the Rav to Riverside Plaza, and then someone from the Mizrahi took the Rav to Long Beach. And today, Danny Rosenthal sits right in front of me Shabbos morning at the 6:30 minyan for years already. So this even might have been given the night of my wedding. These talks that the Rav gave at the Mizrahi were later published first in Yiddish, then in Hebrew, then in English. I think there's even a Russian translation today, Chamesh Drashot. It was originally Fiyad Drashot, then they added a fifth. It's in Yiddish. It was given in Yiddish. It's published in Yiddish too. Yeah, it was published originally in Yiddish. Fiyad Drashot, then it became Chamesh Drashot, and then the Rav speaks. So one of these Drashot, the Rav, homiletically, Rav Shach was very upset with this drasha. He writes against it in Chelik Dalad of his Ktavim. But the truth is with being totally without prejudice. The truth is with the Rav. We have a right to homiletics. Homiletics didn't end 2,000 years ago. So the Rav raised the issue, what was the machloikis between Yosef and Echav? That's what the drush is called, Yosef the Echav. Joseph, his brothers, and the Rav explained, the brothers were very content in Eretz Goshen. They were very happy in East Brunswick. Imagine if someone came into here tonight and held a big meeting and said, everyone in East Brunswick and Highland Park and Edison, you have to get ready to go in Aliyah. You have to learn Hebrew. You have to learn a different mentality, a different bank system. You would laugh him out. Yeah, and Andi Yoshev Khan, Andi Mafsut, Ma Mahabaya, what's the problem? I'm here, I'm happy, I'm content that at home. Yosef at Tzaddik told the brothers, you have to get ready. We're going to be in an Eretz Solahem. We're going to be in a land that's not ours. We're going to be in a new civilization. We have to be big enough and great enough to understand it, conquer it, be part of it, and survive in it. No. Joseph had these dreams. The brothers laughed at him. Ultimately, who was right? If not for Yosef, we wouldn't be sitting here. If not for Ephraim and Menashe, what I spoke about yesterday, we wouldn't have survived. So the Rav explained, and this was totally different than his hesped for Rav Chaim Isaac Rezhansky. The Rav explained, what was the machloket about? When it comes to halacha, the Ribbono Shel Olam has nothing to do with our psak. Right or wrong, the sugya of Tanur D'Achnayi, Baba Mitzia, the sugya Perik Bet, Rosh Hashanah, the Luach, Eilam Oad, even if you're wrong, the man is a man. Torah cannot be given to humans and expect them to be humans that are above mortality. We make mistakes. The psak is like the beitin shel mata. And you know what happened with the tanur, the oven? Was it tahar? Was it pure? Was it not pure? And the rabbis voted it was impure, and a heavenly voice rings out that it's pure, and they tell the Ribbono shel Olam, lo b'shamayim hi, v'lo me'ei b'hayam, it's not your business. We're paskening down. And Eliyahu HaNavi meets God and says, how do you feel about that? And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, knew those famous words, Nitzchuni banai, Nitzchuni. You're right, my sons. You're right. The Rav said that's when it comes to halacha. But when it comes to hashkafa, you have to reevaluate constantly. You have to look over your shoulder. You have to see what is happening. What is correct? What does God want? What has worked out? What is blessed? And he said, the brothers were the Agudat Yisrael. They were happy in Warsaw. They were happy in Vilna. They were happy in Lodz. They were happy in Mir. They were happy in Slobodka. They were happy in Panovich. They were happy in Belz. They were happy in Gaya. Happy in Lubavitch. Remain behind. Don't plan for the future. Yosef HaTzadik was the Mizrahi. He understood there'll be a Holocaust. We have to get the land of Israel ready. And Yosef HaTzadik, he went out. His understanding was what God wanted. Hashkafer is different. And I need not tell you that this reflects the Rav's thinking, the Rav's change, and how he went from Aguda to being a Mizrahiite. So let me reiterate so far. Yes, the Rav traveled the long way. No question, Reb Chaim, the greatest influence in his life. Agudat Yisrael, Germany, his father, his mother. World War II, particularly the March on Washington, 1943. 46 on, public identity with the Mizrahi movement, pride in its achievements. His own grandsons later to fight in the Lebanese War in 1982. Kol Daldi Dofek, that presentation, that essay, lingers on in so many different languages. I get so many questions. Israelis call me to interpretation, so inspired. To me, Yosef Yechav, what a fabulous Hashkafic statement. And we're seeing it again in Israel. The Haredi world wants to come into the mainstream. They're no longer frightened, what I spoke about yesterday. You can come into the world with a Bekisha, with a Strimal, with Bart and Payas, and you can be the greatest medical doctor, the greatest scientist, the greatest officer in the army, and you're part of the crowd today. It's a different Israel. And you see hashkafically how that viewpoint today can take hold because the circumstances are ripe. I want to end off with perhaps, I don't want to argue with Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, some of you may be familiar in the first volume of the Rav. I reproduce a letter of the Rav to me, and my students, Nicola, said, Rebbe, use this letter, it's better than any haskama. Reb Aaron said about that letter, it's the most important letter he ever saw written by his father-in-law. I'm holding in front of me a letter that surfaced in 1996. I consider this letter the most important letter I've ever seen written by the Rav. And the story of the letter, overwhelming. A lady was quite ill at the time, Miriam Shilo, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha. And she had been a teacher in the Mizrahi school system, which developed Yesh Mayayin from nothing. It developed into a massive school system over the last 70 years. One of the innovations, of course, the Chatzotrot have to be blown in this generation. One of the innovations was Ulpanot, the high schools for girls. And then came the Six-Day War. And in her classroom, Miriam gets the following question from the girls. Morati, our teacher, we just studied the Kol Dodi Dofek. Studied it with you in the class. We just experienced the Six-Day War. How can it be that Rav Soloveitchik still lives in Boston? And she wrote to the Rav. And this was a very traumatic time for the Rav. As you know, 67, the three Avelot, which we all experienced with him, one after another, going from the least moderate to the worst. First his mother, and that's Dr. Shel Chayim, that parents have to die. Halabai, long before the children. Then his brother, his sibling, Rav Shmuel, and then Lo Aleinu Churban Habayit, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. When your wife dies in your lifetime, your husband in your lifetime, it's Churban Habayit, it's the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, his wife died. And he answers her, and I wrote out the letter, I had the secretary of the Kollel type it, and I popularized it, and the letter is beautiful. Kavod ha-givedet Miriam Shilo she-tichyeh shalom uvracha. And he apologizes. I didn't answer your letter until now. And halavai, we're living in a world where there's too much divorce. Halavai, every young couple should study the first paragraph in this letter. Kasheh chayta alai v'gam adayin kasheh hi-aktiva. It's hard for me to write. Shakua hineni bi'avelut al mot rayati hachavei ba. I am totally in mourning for the loss of my dear wife. She was the apple of my eye and the love of my soul. Zichrona levracha. Olami hitmotet v'charav. My world is destroyed and gone. Ka'amur, as I say, gam akshav ani kotev bedema uvedam libi hakarua v'hamarutach. And even now I write with tears and blood of my broken heart, my overwhelmed emotion. And he says, I thank you for your words. I accept your complaints. Baratzon, Amnon, you are right. Chatati le'eretz ha'kodesh. You are absolutely right. I have sinned against the Holy Land. Hineni bein hamafagrim. I'm one of those that have not been quick to understand. Mafager. We use it in many different concepts in modern Hebrew, but here it means I've been slow in understanding. But you have to understand a lot of this happened because of matters that I can't control. Nevertheless, I'm not looking for excuses and I'm not looking to defend myself. I have sinned. V'hakolat talui b'tzavari, and I am responsible. And I want you to know, yesterday my wife and I, Zichrona Levracha, made up our minds. We will come to Israel at least 6 months a year. What is he referring to? His teaching in the Gris Kolil, which was then in the, I would say, in the planning stage with Mr. Gruss, and we'll see the land, we'll see the people who live there. Ulam rabot machshavot b'lev adam, ira masha ira, v'rabot anchati v'libi dovai. He says, a man has many thoughts. This is what has happened. I can't change it, unfortunately. And the rest of the letter is just beautiful because you have to read between the lines. He says, nevertheless, we're both involved in very important tasks in life. You teach Torah, you said to me, in a small yeshiv. I teach Torah in a big city, but both of us are involved in the most important task of the Jewish people, perpetuating the Torah with the next generation. And the last part of the letter, evidently she wrote to him that, who am I to write to the Gadol Hadar? I'm a simple lady, but nevertheless I feel I have to answer my students. And the Rav writes, Gamani Yehudi Pashut. And I too am a small person, a simple person. But let us not forget that what we're in doing enables the survival of the Jewish people. It is a beautiful letter, B'Kavod Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. I understand this letter today is being studied in all the schools where they study the Kol Dodido Fake. In addition, they have Miriam Shiloh. Her husband was the Rav of Kedumim. I believe he's not also alive anymore. These are people, if you want to see great Jews, go to Yehuda V'Shomron and just view some of the Jews living there, and you'll see the greatest Jews of our generation. So let me conclude our long weekend here. First of all, ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. You have no idea what condition I was a week ago. And the trip is difficult, and Izzy Rifkin knows my age, so we cannot hide from the Ribbono Shel Olam. A week ago on Shabbos, I couldn't speak. I had no voice whatsoever, totally broken. Sunday, I was able to give a lecture, but with a voice that you wouldn't recognize. And Baruch Hashem, a week later, during the week already, I gave in West Hempstead on Wednesday, and you could recognize the voice. And a week later, we were able to do Mole V'Gadish right here in East Brunswick. Halavai, we should be zeicha to meet again but above all in my classroom. I just want to mention, I was told by Hashem Melech, as his real name is, you know him as Alvin, that some of you own property in Yerushalayim and you're interested in learning, so you're all invited to my classes. My classes are open to the public. They're now turning it into a public shayua so that it will be men and women, and no one can say that Yeshivas Rishchol Chana has mixed classes. We officially are becoming a public shayua, postgraduate level. And you can come Sunday, Monday. I give Shia 9:05 in the morning, Sunday Shas and Paiskim. But it's a world that even if you don't have a lot of background, the teacher learned by the Rav, and he's learned how to teach from the Rav, that even if you don't have all the background, you'll comprehend 75%. If you have the background, you'll comprehend 100%. If you're a Talmud Chacham, you'll comprehend 125%. You'll understand beyond. The Monday class right now is much easier to follow, and even President Trump, if he sat in the class for the hour and a half, would be able to follow. I want to introduce to you, we didn't talk about it, but some of you know that my wife and I, the Mossad, tapped us on the shoulder, and we worked in Communist Russia for 10 years, and you're not the same again. And this gentleman, Rabbi David Kufnis, is our executive director in the United States, involved with fundraising to support all that we're doing in the former Soviet Union and in the state of Israel. David.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Kefet, for that fascinating lecture, and thank you everybody for coming. I'm David Kufnis. I'm the executive director of American Friends of Shvut Ami, and Rabbi Kefet has kindly agreed to stay behind and sign books today for tzedakah, and that will be taking place in the social hall in just 3 minutes, where you can also enjoy some light refreshments. But in the meantime, before that, I wanted to thank, first of all, Tony Winston for all his hard work making sure that this Shabbaton would be so successful, and of course all the generous sponsors, and together with, obviously, with Rabbi Unterman and Young Israel of East Brunswick for hosting Rabbi Rakefet this weekend. We've had the privilege today and over Shabbos to hear from a respected Torah scholar, a prolific author, and a beloved master teacher who has inspired and educated many thousands of students over his 60 years in the field. And I'm sure I speak on behalf of everybody here when I wish him and his Ashes Chayil Malka many more years of good health, and they should be able to continue to travel to Chutz Laaretz, to write, to spread Torah for many years to come. If you were to ask the leading Orthodox Jewish thinkers today, what is the biggest problem facing the Jewish people? Maybe one or two would say anti-Semitism. We've got a lot of enemies around the world. Maybe one or two would say infighting. We don't get along. We're our worst enemy. In my experience, most experts will agree that the biggest problem facing the Jewish people today is assimilation and intermarriage. It's destroying the Jewish people, it's destroying the Jewish future. In England, where I'm from, so there's a 25% intermarriage rate. And that means that one out of every four Jews in the UK are marrying out. Here in the United States, that figure is much higher. The Pew study reports that 58%, that's almost two out of every three Jews in the United States, choose partners outside the faith. Almost two out of every three. That's a disaster. But if you think that's bad, there is a much bigger crisis going on not too far from here. A lot of people don't realize that after the Iron Curtain fell in the early 90s, even though a million Russian Jews immigrated to Israel, but hundreds of thousands, many hundreds of thousands, some even say a million, up to a million, stayed behind. And that's what is today the former Soviet Union. And that is the world's third largest Jewish population after Israel and the US. And we know that 70 years of communist rule almost completely destroyed the Jewish soul, the Yiddishkeit of those people. And that effect is reflected today in the 80 to 90% intermarriage rate across all 15 countries of the FSU, 80 to 90%. And I call these people the Jews that everyone has forgotten about. And that is because they're so far away, they're out of sight, out of mind. And let's face it, they don't really make a lot of noise. Shvut Ami had the great honor to have Elie Wiesel as our honorary chairman for over 30 years, until he passed away a couple of years ago, almost to the day. He wrote a famous book after he went to visit the Jews in the Soviet Union, and called The Jews of Silence. And he ends one of the chapters with the following amazing words. He said, "What torments me most is not the Jews of silence I met in Russia, but the silence of the Jews I live amongst today." And Rabbi Rakefet and Malka vowed in the late 70s that they would never be silent about this critical cause. They believe that if you care about the Jewish people, then you have to care about Russian Jews. You have to care about the hundreds of thousands of unaffiliated Jews who remain in the FSU today. And soon after their first trip to Russia for the Mossad, teaching Torah undercover, Rabbi Rakefet became a founding board member of Shvut Ami. And since then, he has spent countless hours traveling with Malka, lecturing and raising awareness and funding for Shvut Ami's critical work, training Russian rabbis and teachers in Israel to go back to the FSU and to help rebuild Jewish communities there. A few months ago, Shvut Ami honored Rabbi Rakefet at a dinner in Ra'anana in Israel for his over 30 years of service to the organization. And there's a young woman, her name is Polina Mazarov, young Russian woman. She spoke about how Shvut Ami changed her life. And she said that when she was 16 years old, she moved to Moscow to attend university there. And in her third year of school, she signed up for Shvut Ami's two-week trip to Israel. And Polina explained that growing up in a secular family in Russia, she only remembered two Jewish experiences in her entire childhood. Firstly, she said her father used to bring Hanukkah candles home, and he would light the menorah and read the bracha from the box of candles in Hebrew. And she said the whole family used to laugh every time they heard it, because the words sounded so strange to them. And she also remembers, she said, eating matzah in her home, although she confessed that they ate it all year round, and in addition to bread on Pesach. And that was her entire Jewish experience until she spent 2 weeks with Shvut Ami in Israel. And today I'm very proud to say that Polina stood up there and she told the crowd that she lives in Efrat with her Jewish husband, who's a personal trainer, and her two-year-old baby. And she told the audience in Ra'anana that if it was not for Shvut Ami, she would have ended up marrying out. Sometimes it's that simple. And besides everything else that Rabbi Rakefet has done in his life, and this is only a partial list, student of the Rav, pulpit rabbi, high school Rebbe, editor of Encyclopedia Judaica, of course, master teacher extraordinaire, soldier in the IDF, Mossad secret agent, professor of Talmudic literature at Grus, founding board member of Shvut Ami, and of course, beloved husband, father, grandfather, and great-grandfather, who is now on his third time going through Shas, word for word. He has somehow made the time to write and publish these nine amazing books. And they're all amazing. Important historical biographies, including the out-of-print two-volume set on his teacher, the Rav, Contemporary Halacha, Hashkafa, Current Issues, and my favorite, this one here, his personal scholarly memoir, From Washington to Washington. What an amazing accomplishment, truly incredible, and you can't put these books down. And Rabbi Rakefet has spent over 30 years helping to reconnect unaffiliated Russian Jews to Jewish life. And today, there is an opportunity to partner with him by making a generous donation to his cause, to Shvut Ami. Every amount is appreciated, and everybody will receive a full tax receipt. Most of these books are not available in any stores, and today Rabbi Rakefet would like to give everyone here, as a gift, any one of his books for free, and he will sign it outside in the social hall as a token of appreciation to anyone who makes a donation of $100 or more to Shvut Ami. And the more you give, the more books Rabbi Rakefet will give you as a thank you gift, and he is donating 100% of the proceeds to Shvut Ami. All the details are on the second page of this form, which you can get outside. The second page gives you the details how to get these books as a thank you today. You just fill out the second page, bring the book of your choice to Rabbi Rakefet, he'll be in the other room, and he'll sign it for you personally. And lastly, I want to tell you something very special about this four-volume set on the top here, these four books, and they are called Rakafot Aharon. As you probably know by now, our very own Yaakov Weinstein has spent a tremendous amount of time and effort over the last 5 years compiling, editing, and annotating the fascinating information in volumes 3 and 4. And neither Yaakov nor Rabbi Rakefet has taken any financial remuneration for Rekaf Hatoram, for all 4 books, because they want all the proceeds to benefit Shvut Ami's work and Shvut Ami alone. And this brand new 4th volume, Timeless Halakha and Contemporary History, is only available today for pre-ordering. It's not finished yet. And that is because we want to give you the opportunity today to put a dedication in one of the first few pages to Yaakov or to Rabbi Rakefet before it's published. And every penny of the proceeds will go to Shvut Ami. So anybody who would like to thank Yaakov for his amazing work, for his volunteering to do this, for his work with the shul, they want to put a dedication into the first few pages of this book. It's not too late. This has not come out yet. It will be out in the next couple of months. Should fill out the front page of this form outside. That's what the front page is for. If you do choose this book as your thank you gift today, instead of taking the book itself to Rabbi Rakefet to sign, obviously these are pre-orders only, so just take one of these stickers, which I will give you, to Rabbi Rakefet. He will sign a personal message, and that sticker will be put into your book as soon as it comes out, hot off the press, and we will mail the book to you, and you will receive one of the first copies as soon as it comes out. Thank you for listening today. Thank you for coming to support us, and for enjoying our beloved Rabbi Rakefet, and have a great day. Thank you.
Is he? Yeah. Where's the picture of my class?
The, right at the back, you mean? Yeah, I don't know. Rabbi the Rav's class?
1960, yeah, the Rav's class. Class?
Yeah.
There it is.
Okay, I'm heading back into the other room.
Yeah. Is he?
Thank you as well. Thank you very much, Vet and Tadam, for having us on the weekend here. Right, everyone?
Sure.
Freshness, the story.
Here's the picture.
This is the picture. Rabbi, you've identified these
Rabbi Rakefet, I have to tell you something very interesting. You know, I go to the Shiurim at YU at the Stern College, where they have the lecture 3 times a year, 6 series part. So Rabbi J.J. Schachter was one of the lecturers very recently, and he told us the end of the story that you're talking about, where Rabbi Soloveitchik and his wife had an agreement with each other that they would go to Israel 6 months, but then she got sick. And because they had that bond and the promise that they would go together, they would never go back. That's what happened.
Well, he didn't have... I write in Washington, I produce documents. He didn't have the case.
That could be too, but there were all kinds of stories that went around. Supposedly, this is the true story of why he went back.
Well aware.
Yeah, I just thought it was very sad.
Like the mensch.
I enjoyed your lecture.
Thank
you.
Honestly,
if you see my daughter, say hello.
My grandson's going to be in Greece. My grandson by marriage.
Very
Yitzchak,
nice.
Yeah,
Yitzchak
Mizell. Where do you live, Rabbi Rakefet?
Same place for 49 plus
which
years. Rav Chaim Berlin, 18.
Oh.
That's
what
we
used to meet
in the pizza shop.
Yeah, right.
Your daughter
lives
right
next door.
The
right, I know.
That's fine. I was taping him, yeah. And then I sent it to Y.U.
Oh, great.
How are you? What's
your name?
Oh,
hi.
I invited you for
Nice.
Thank you. Tony. Compliments on the collation.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you. But I wasn't in Tony for a joke.
I was telling you the other day about
one of the, what do you call it, couples? You know, the special, the ones that have...
Do I get a special?
We have to ask him. We have
to ask him. Oh, where are
you from? Great
accent.
I'm a celebrity.
You say that? Do you know where they are?
Well, I know who
he
is.
Son got married about
Monday. His son was married? Yeah?
Got you married to about Monday.
But he's not, he lives from, he's not far from the DFL, right?
His son got you married to about Monday. And 70 couples from Monday.
70 couples.
And the plane was not, that's quite, you know. Once they were there, they were a very wealthy family.
He's on the radio every
$1,000 for half a pair.
No, that's $500 for half a
pair. Are you sure? I think it's $1,000.
$1,000 should be enough for my new hotel. Oh, it's definitely a phone that works.